Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time holiday gift wrapper.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that isn't quite ready to name what each of us considers the best of what we watched in 2024. We'll get to that in a week or so. This week, we're going to look at two films that, in theme, style, and execution, couldn't be more different. The first is the latest by Paul Schrader, titled O Canada, a drama that stars Richard Gere, Uma Thurman, and Jacob Elordi. The second is titled simply Flow, and is an 85-minute animated feature by the Latvian filmmaker Gints Zilbalodis, in which nary a word is spoken. Let's begin, though, by entering the room of a man who is dying of cancer. That's where we'll find Leonard Fife, played by Richard Gere, a one-time award-winning documentary filmmaker and later film instructor who, though nearing the end of his life, has agreed to be interviewed by a filmmaking couple, a man, played by Michael Imperioli, and a woman, played by Victoria Hill. While the filmmakers have an agenda, Fife has his own case to make involving, he says, an unveiling, so to speak, of his real self to his wife Emma, played by Uma Thurman. And so the film splits into two parts, the first involving the struggle between Fife, his wife, and the filmmakers to define what the documentary project will be, and the second, Fife's recounting of his, we come to see, troubled past, with Jacob Elordi playing his younger self. Schrader, who specializes in creating intense, often soul-bearing dramas, wrote the screenplay from Russell Banks' 2021 novel Foregone, Banks having died a year later, just as he'd adapted Banks' novel Affliction in 1997. And while many of Schrader's familiar themes play out in O Canada, and while the acting of Gere in particular is good, Fife as a character remains pretty much of a puzzle that the film never seems to resolve.
Although that's the ultimate point of the movie, isn't it? That this is a man who's trying to make sense of his past, not just for the benefit of his loved ones, but for himself. And yet his mind and his body have betrayed him to the degree that he's lost sense of who he really is and where his personal misgivings even come from. I mean, he's trying to confess, but the ultimate question is, to what? And we never totally find out, even though there are hints here and there. And I think that's what's so sad about the movie, and maybe even kind of frustrating about it. I agree with you on that. But the thing that I think ultimately worked for me about O Canada is that it's not just about a man examining his past. It's a man examining his past through his preferred artistic medium, which is film. I'm talking about both Paul Schrader and Leonard Fife at the same time. And we know that film can be used to communicate great truths, but it can also be used to tell big lies. And so the movie, O Canada, is constantly changing points of view. It's constantly changing aspect ratios. It's sometimes in color. It's sometimes in black and white. Occasionally, the older actors are playing the younger versions of themselves, and even sometimes other characters in the flashbacks. And sometimes they don't. And so we really can't trust anything that we see from the perspective of the Leonard Fife character as he's looking back at his life. And so this movie, O Canada, is sort of unfocused by design. And I think it kept me more engaged than if it had been told in a more straightforward fashion. But it's also what makes the movie kind of ultimately really hard to sink your teeth into in the way that some of Schrader's best work does. And as you mentioned, this is the second time that Schrader has adapted Russell Banks, previously with Affliction, which has those great performances from Nick Nolte and James Coburn, who won an Academy Award for it. And that was another story about a man losing his grip on sanity and maybe even reality. And it's so stark and so unforgiving, but it also has this kind of cerebral, elusive quality to it, as if what we're seeing maybe isn't really happening, but it still punches you in the gut. And this movie, O Canada, you know, his other Banks adaptation, and Russell Banks is still probably best known for The Sweet Hereafter, which Adam McGoyan turned into another really strange, wonderful movie. This movie is much more mysterious.
Adam McGoyan, a Canadian filmmaker, so he has this attachment to Canada. I don't know exactly why it is, but I don't know why he called this movie O Canada, except that...
It makes sense at the end of the movie, but why he didn't... I'm actually glad he called it O Canada, because Foregone, we've had all these conversations about forgettable movie titles lately. I would have forgotten the title Foregone, but I do remember O Canada.
But you can sing this one.
I can sing this one. I won't, but
I
can.
Yeah, I think they need to stop making movies with titles that could be paragraphs in and of themselves that we could never remember. But so... I know you're much more of a Schrader fan than some of us are.
It's true.
I mean, I go back to his earlier work when he collaborated with Scorsese, you know, in writing Taxi Driver and Raging Bull and
Last
all of
Temptation
these things.
Of Christ.
Right, exactly, which, you know, I've always liked. Mm-hmm. But I think his more recent films that you've been positively affected by, such as First Reformed, this seems to fall among that full range of his work that he's done. I guess my struggle with O Canada was, first of all, it involves, you know, an older person supposedly confessing to things that he has not revealed to others sort of along the way. And keep in mind that Schrader and Richard Gere are like Dan's age. So maybe I think that I was sort of affected by,
Thanks,
is this what it's going to be like at the end of Dan's life? Just putting it out there. No.
Oh, but, I got to tell you.
I know. I think
bring in a film crew.
The problem that I
confess
had.
Confess your sins.
Was we know in the past that our protagonist, Leonard Fyfe, has made a career change. But I don't think that Schrader emphasized enough that his sort of status was all based on this backstory he had created for himself that turns out maybe not to be exactly as it has been presented. And I think that needed to be emphasized a little bit more, because when he makes these reveals, they don't seem as startling as I thought that they would be, you know, in terms of his infidelity, the choices that he made and sort of covered up with these highfalutin morality statements and so forth. And so that didn't quite work for me. I think I needed a little more. But the thing that really didn't work for me was Elordi, who we've seen obviously as Elvis. We've seen him in these other films. And I do think that he captured sort of Richard Gere's way of moving and talking and so forth. But come on, like he's like 6'7" and Richard Gere's like 5'7". And I know we all shrink in our older age, but that was too much to buy. And I don't know why that choice was made. It just seems silly.
I had the same problem with that until what Nathan was saying in terms of his going back and talking about everything and revealing his life, what's real and what's not real.
Right.
So why wouldn't he go back and remember himself as somebody who's a lot taller than he is?
It's almost like Schrader's given himself an escape hatch in that way, where it's like, well, but you have to take everything he says with a grain of salt. So he's imagining himself as being taller, maybe
this
even more handsome
among
than
men.
He was. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
right.
I had more of a problem with the introduction of the son, who at one point we hear his voice narrating and we're going, wait a second, who is that? You know, he goes, I didn't get there until a week after my dad died. Oh, that's early
he's,
on. In,
he's the first
the
narrator we hear.
Exactly.
In fact. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
So we think the movie's going to be told through his eyes, and yet it isn't. And the second part of that same thing involving the son is that he, Leonard Fyfe, is such a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's really not a likable character at all. You know, and he rejects his son. And there were just so many things in the film that I found disturbing that it was hard for me to connect with it.
And I think Nathan is correct in that these shifting perspectives either work or don't work for you, because they do go back and forth. And I was kind of appreciating the fact that Schrader would substitute the older Leonard Fyfe for the younger one and put them in these different scenarios. I thought that was actually creative and not confusing.
It reminded me of what Spike Lee did with The Five Bloods, where it was these old guys like remembering their time in Vietnam, where one of their friends died, but they survived. And in the flashbacks, they look like themselves as old guys. And so I think that's a really clever touch. And, you know, Paul Schrader's work is filled with men trying to absolve their sins.
Yeah.
That's the central theme and image of his work. And usually that manifests in violence. I mean, going all the way back to his screenplays for Taxi Driver, for Rolling Thunder, certainly in this connected trilogy he just did with First Reformed, The Card Counter, and Master Gardener, even American Gigolo, which is the movie that he and Richard Gere did together.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so you wonder how much of that, you know, that was like 45 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that represented their youth.
Absolutely.
In a sense.
Yeah.
So now we're looking back on what has transpired.
Yes, and here there's no physical violence in O Canada, but there is emotional torment. And you see that he has abandoned multiple children. As you mentioned, he cruelly pushes his son away. He seduced his students. His entire career as this humanitarian artist is both, if we can trust what we're seeing, both self-serving and even kind of an accident. Like, he basically fell backwards into
basically
it.
Basically bogus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's touching on the ethics of art and in the way that the Michael Imperioli character is using things that he's been taught to now document.
And then
his
he's
teacher.
Replicating
exactly.
his life yeah. in some
so
ways.
So there's lots of interesting stuff going on in this movie. I don't know if it all totally connects, but I'm going to be thinking about it a lot. And I have a feeling if I am to go back and revisit O Canada, I'll appreciate it more a second time, just knowing where it ends from the
beginning. And I'm not sure that there was a sufficient backstory for the Uma Thurman character. You know, she sort of became a nothing burger.
A little bit.
But yeah, I will think about this movie as well. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I loved it.
It's elliptical.
As with most things Schrader are. And that was our discussion of Paul Schrader's film, O Canada. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to talk about the animated film Flow. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the film O Canada. Let's now turn to something completely different. An animated feature from Latvian filmmaker Gints Zilbalodis that features a cat and his newfound friends struggling to survive a world that suddenly and unaccountably has been flooded. It's all too common for films, whether animated or live action, to feature animals whose voices are provided by human actors. Latvian filmmaker Zilbalodis takes a different tack with his feature Flow, in that not a single word is spoken during its 85-minute run. Instead, we are introduced to a cat whose everyday life is disrupted by a rush of water that ultimately forces, for convenience sake, I'll use he-him pronouns, him to find refuge in a sailboat piloted by a capybara, a kind of large rodent. Soon they are joined by a secretary bird resembling a kind of flamingo, a ringtail lemur, and a Labrador retriever. Together, the quintet sails on, weathering the occasional near disaster until Zilbalodis delivers his open-ended finish. The animation is nothing like anything Disney or Pixar would come up with, resembling more the kind of computer-generated world that you might find in an open-world video game. I found myself thinking of the Cyan-produced graphic adventure game Myst. But it is effective, avoiding the saccharine tone of so many other features aimed mostly at children, yet still managing to be touching. And two, while the climate change and biblical messages are subtle, if obvious, the animals never seem less than real, even if our heroic cat does learn to skin dive in a way that Mary Pat's and my own cat, Bella, would never dream of.
That's for sure. This film is a meditative commentary on what's happening in the world, or at least that's one way to look at it. Certainly Flow, even its title, I find intriguing given its subject matter. So even though there's no dialogue, this film definitely has something to say. And I think it may affect those who revere their animal companions differently from maybe others, because it's presented in a very realistic fashion. These are not characters who are, except on a couple of rare occasions, trying to be human in any sense. I mean, they have human emotions, it seems. They have human courses of dealing with one another, but they're not anthropomorphized in a way that we oftentimes see with other animal character films. And I guess I took it more as a commentary on the challenges that we face in our world today. But as you said, I mean, it could be biblical as well, going back to Noah's Ark. And we see as these creatures, as these characters are sort of working their way through this new wet world, we see buildings that look like they came from Venice, or we see this Mount Rushmore-like portrayal, and then it looks like Petra in Jordan. But we don't know why the waters have come, but we know that this group is going to try to ultimately collaborate and work together to manage their lives in this new world that's been thrust upon them. And it's, I mean, there is no dialogue. I thought the animation was really appealing because it does mimic in so many ways the way that these animals actually move, you know, in real life.
And act like the dog.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think this is the type of movie that's a perfect holiday movie. It's playing at the Magic Lantern. It's still in the theater. I think ideally you might want to see it there because it really is this kind of take a break sort of film in contrast to some of the other big releases that are happening
now. And when you say it's good for children, I mean, I'm maybe not the really young ones, but when the showing we went to this past weekend, there was a young girl. She may have been 10 years old. And I asked her what she thought. And she went, great.
Oh, so, okay. Well, there you go. Yeah, I was wondering about that because there is peril throughout the movie.
Yes.
And you
like
know,
Bambi.
Well, I would say it's maybe a little bit less intense than Bambi, which, you know, ruined generations of children, made us more jaded to the world, I think. But I had an unusual journey, or maybe an incredible journey, if you want to continue the animal movie metaphor with Flo. Because at first I was engaged by this menagerie that develops, the individual personalities of the animals and their roles within the group of survivors. And I was thinking, am I more like the lemur? Do I relate to the capybara? Like, I think I would be more like the lemur. Because,
so you were anthropomorphizing yourself?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have a lot to think about as the movie's going because there isn't any dialogue, as you said. And so, you know, your mind does kind of wander a little bit. But I think I'd be more like the lemur because he's like hoarding stuff and thinks that he's more integral to the group than he actually is. And I was impressed too by the animated movements of the animals because, like you said, they do kind of take on characteristics of more cartoon animals where sometimes they have almost human logic, like they understand how things work, but then they'll get pulled back by their animal instincts, like the cat will have to chase the refracted light from the
yes.
mirror, you know, like it's a laser pointer or something.
The dog will have to bring the basically what he considers a ball.
Yeah, he has to play fetch with
yeah,
it. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. But eventually I kind of became more intrigued by all the possibilities of the environments around them because, like you said, you are kind of wondering what exactly happened here and where are we? I mean, something cataclysmic has happened and there are all these statues and monuments that are from all over that are kind of like rising out of the water.
Like some very large
and
cat statues.
Not
exactly.
A single human in sight.
Yes. And I totally, when you made the comparison to something like Myst, that's exactly what I thought too. It felt like one of those open world kind of CD-ROM games that you
where you can just explore rather than shoot or kill people.
Exactly,
you're just, wow, what is this?
But it's sort of like what would happen if all the people from Waterworld, you know, went away, or if the opening scenes of WALL-E continued without the human characters. It sort of has that feel. I'm still not totally convinced that there's enough material for a feature film here, though. I think by about a half hour in, I kind of felt like I got what it was doing. I wasn't bored. I just think it does kind of repeat itself a little bit. But I mean, the technical aspects of it are undeniable. And the fact that we should mention that Flo was designed with this free open source animation software called Blender, which, you know, it's sort of like the democratization of technology where it sort of feels like the late 90s, early 2000s, when filmmakers had access to consumer grade computers and electronics, people like Richard Linklater were making animated films on their Macs, you know, so it kind of has that feel.
The thing is that none of the three of us are experts in this kind of stuff. But I found it amazing how he would move the camera around, and he's doing it all digitally, you know, in the making of Flo, that the camera moves back and forth or you see reflections in the mirror. It was almost as if it were really live happening on a set. It's incredible what can be done these days with just a simple computer.
And I also want to call out even more so than the animation, because there were times during Flo where it felt less like a movie and more like a almost like a test of a new kind of software. Like, look what I can do with this technology. It kind of feels like that. I want to call out the sound design of this movie, because I think it's great.
How about the music?
That too. But I was just thinking, like, the way that the water sounds as it's lapping against the boat, the plants that emerge from the water, the sounds of the animals for one, but the sounds of like the tree branches cracking. It's so, it feels so real and immersive. So I really liked the sound element of the movie almost as much, and maybe even more than the visuals.
Go ahead.
Oh, I can tell you, after seeing Flo, if you have an animal companion at home, you're going to go and try to watch how they move, because it did seem very accurate. And the sounds that they make, you know, even though they're not talking, we know that they are kind of talking.
They're communicating in some way. It does make me wonder if they used some kind of like rotoscoping technology for making this, because some of the animal movements, I mean, it really does look like they just kind of animated over a real video of a dog running or a cat climbing or whatever.
And I have a suggestion for anybody who's going to go see this movie, that there is a sequence at the very end in which it can be seen as really sad. And, you know, you think, oh, my gosh,
this, all hope
this
is
particular,
lost.
Yeah, this particular character. But if you wait till the end of the credit sequence, you see that there's something that turns completely around. And maybe it's not so sad. Maybe these floods come and they go and they come and they go.
So. Yeah, and I do think that, because I know, I have had people tell me this, you know, oh, this is a movie about an animal. Does the animal die in the movie? That's a thing that people want to know. They don't want to see something if they know that happens. The animals are in peril. Again, they're animated animals, so they're not like animal actors. But the animals are in peril, but they do okay. I think we could say that. Yeah.
Right.
There's nothing scarring like in Bambi,
Or in Lion King.
Yeah, that's true.
But at the same time, there's nothing really sweet and saccharine about Disney and Pixar either. It's just progresses the way real life does.
With a few exceptions.
Exactly. Exactly. At any rate, that was our discussion of Flo. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed the Paul Schrader film O Canada. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the author/film producer Don Hahn. Sometimes it's not so much what the characters are saying, but what they're feeling, thinking, or doing that is important to an animated feature. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.